Case, business systems, engineering versus international business machines, 08-1081. And for the appellant, Mr. Colson.
Please the court. My name is Bill Colson, and I'm representing the appellant, business systems engineering. This is a contract case under Illinois law. It was not disputed that the parties had a contractual relationship. BSE, my client, was a subcontractor of IBM on a CTA project in which software was being developed for the Chicago Transit Authority. The issue before the court below and the issue before this court is, was part of that contractual relationship a binding provision for IBM to provide $3.6 million in work to BSE? And we submitted that to the court below and to this court not only written manifestations of that $3.6 million from IBM, but the deposition admissions of no fewer than three IBM executives evidencing in lay terms an intent to be bound by IBM.
What were the terms of the contract that you're here on?
The terms of the contract that we are here on was that IBM would provide a total of $3.6 million worth of software subcontracting work to BSE.
Over what time frame?
Over the time period of the CTA project. So, and the way that would be done, there would be a bunch of individual statements of work. That was the pattern and practice that the parties entered into.
Over the entirety of the project, or however long that would be?
Yes.
And when would payments be made?
What payments were made as each individual piece of work was completed. And, you know, during the time of this contract, neither party evinced any uncertainty as to the terms or the duration. These are things that have come up only after litigation.
Well, you say individual statements. Those individual statements segment the work, don't they? There's a beginning and an end to each of those?
Yes, the individual statements.
And you get paid for each of those?
Yes. And that's the process by which our theory, our belief, the $3.6 million in work was to be realized. One is specific step at a time. And neither party had a problem with that.
But there are problems as you went along with these, whatever you call them, the individual statements. Either they're non-performance or didn't have the right people. So each of them weren't met preliminarily. So they didn't even begin, much less end.
No, I think there were a number of statements. There were $2.2 million worth
right.
of work was, in fact, done.
But others were not.
Well, no. Every statement of work that was submitted was the work was done by BSE and they were paid. The contract we're suing on is there's another $1.4 million worth of work that we believe the evidence showed IBM committed to give to BSE and did not.
Statements of work that were not, I guess, initiated.
Well, there would be $1.4 million in work, which would be manifested by a number of individual statements of work. No question about that.
The way I understand it, that each statement of work is kind of an individual contract. It's a contract for a certain part of the project.
Yes, I think that's a fair characterization.
And the way they're saying it, at least, is that there were some, I guess, segments of work where your client didn't have the proper personnel or didn't have the wherewithal or something to actually perform.
Well, they may or may not, if this case ever went to trial, they may or may not be able to raise that as a defense. I don't think that's the issue that the district court passed on in summary judgment, and that's not why we're here. I don't think they have any meritorious defenses in those matters. They may, but that would be something for trial and remand. The issue now is, was there a commitment that is binding for $3.6 million worth of work as opposed to the $2.2? And if I might, I would like to just, I've got three or four points that I think the district court did not deal with that are critical on that point. You know, the Illinois cases talk about, was there an intent to be bound when you have a contract that's not written? And we've cited the cases, and they say it's a fact question for a jury. They don't say it's a pure question of law, as the district court held. I lay out the chronology in our brief, but August 8th, 2003,
As an oral contract, don't you have a statute of frauds problem?
Not here, we don't, no.
Why not? You said the time frame is for the course of the CTA project, which extends well beyond the 8 months between that last Schedule C and when your client shut down.
Right. The statute of frauds was never pleaded as a defense, but more to the point, the statute of frauds, there are written manifestations of this contract of $3.6 million, which is what the statute of frauds requires. It doesn't require a complete writing, but it requires enough of a writing so that there was evidence that the contract existed. That's number one. Number two, under our theory, there was part performance. You had part performance. You had $2.2 million in work performed of what we say should have been total of $3.6 million. The third point is it could have been performed within 1 year. The contract, the non-written contract agreeing to $3.6 million was consummated in August of 2003. 10 months later, BSC was out of business because they didn't get the work. So it could have been performed within a year. So I don't think they have a statute of frauds defense here. Let me just... A fellow named John Caramilla, who is the project partner for IBM, on August 8, 2003... And it's in our appendix at A40, signed a Schedule D, they call it. Under oath, he signed it. Utilization plan. We concede, and the court found that this by itself is not the written contract, but it is evidence of the written contract. And what this IBM executive, who's the project partner, says under oath is the type of work to be performed. Provide development resources for conversions, interfaces, and customizations. Contract amount, $3.6 million. That's the IBM executive's word on the document. Contract amount. He doesn't say projection amount. He doesn't say hope for amount. He says contract amount. He signs it under oath. Certainly that is entitled to some weight when this court decides whether there is evidence that it, from which a jury could have found that IBM had an intent to be bound along with BSE. A fellow named James Lautenbach, who was a client executive on the CTA project for IBM, in an email, which is in our appendix, states that they agreed, it's his word, on $3.6 million. It was, when it was raised to $8 million, then at the end it was, by mutual agreement, reduced to $3.6 million. James Olhaver, who was the contract administrator for IBM, and I'm describing who these people are because these are executives on this project for IBM. Mr. Olhaver is trained as a lawyer. He testified that we committed, in writing, we committed to spend a specific dollar amount. A lady named Jan Hammond from IBM, who was a subcontract administrator, also said the subcontract was for a specific dollar amount. So IBM people are using words like contract amount, agreed, by mutual agreement, committed for specific amounts. Those are not my words. Those are not BSC words. Those are IBM's words. And yet the district court, in her opinion, did not devote one word or one syllable to the testimony of these three IBM executives. Now, to be sure, those are layman's characterizations by these three individuals. I'm not suggesting that they're legal conclusions. But as lay characterizations, doesn't that constitute pretty persuasive evidence that IBM had an intent to be bound to the $3.6 million? I submit that it does. I think a jury would find that very persuasive, I think, if we ever get to a jury. But the district court didn't even mention those three pieces of testimony in her 14-page opinion. The BSC people who are over here, corroborated it. They said, yeah, we had a handshake agreement. It was a commitment. Mr. Roberts said it was an unconditional obligation, oral agreement. Again, those are lay characterizations, but they corroborate the important evidence in this case, which are IBM's own executives, who certainly, by their own comments and by their written commitments, evidence an intent to be bound by IBM. The district court did not deal with that at all, and I think that worked a great unfairness to BSE. Specificity. The district court found, well, the terms aren't specific enough. And I submit to the court, all you have to do is look at one of these statements of work, which IBM concedes is specific enough to be a written contract, and compare the descriptions and the specificity of the descriptions of work and the statement of work with the descriptions in the items in our appendix, the Schedule D that I just referred to, and the Lautenbach email, IBM emailing, and they are every bit as detailed. The documents we're relying on are every bit as detailed, I submit, as this SOW is, the statements of work that IBM concedes is specific enough. So what's fair for IBM ought to be fair for BSC. And as I mentioned at the time, neither side evinced any doubts as to the specificity of the contract. I do want to reserve some time for rebuttal, if I might. I just think that there is abundant evidence here of an intent to be bound, which the cases say are key, for $3.6 million as a commitment. and a jury could so find, and the judge should not have ignored that evidence and granted summary judgment, depriving BSE of its day in court. Thank you.
Thank you. And for the appellee, Mr. Jacobs.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Todd Jacobs on behalf of the appellee, IBM Corporation. This case arises, as counsel says, out of a computer implementation that IBM performed for the Chicago Transit Authority. IBM was the prime contractor. The plaintiff appellant here, BSE, was a subcontractor of IBM. And I don't want the court to get lost in the acronyms here. There's a lot of terminology. But what BSE was is what's called a DBE, a disadvantaged business entity. And on this contract with the CTA, there were six separate DBEs working for IBM that had to meet a 30% contract requirement. And I know I have limited time here today, and I thought what might be the most beneficial is to describe for the court what the actual contracting structure is and why it shows what BSE claims as a contract fails as a matter of law for multiple reasons. In the district court, recall, this was a five-count complaint. BSE had a number of theories. They've now abandoned four of them on appeal. We're down to one. It's a breach of contract case. Judge Bucklow found, as a matter of law, and I think this is where I depart company from counsel, this is a legal issue as to whether the contract that BSE is alleging is sufficiently definite and certain and contains the essential terms required under Illinois law for contract formation. Judge Bucklow ruled no, it doesn't. It is a matter of law. This court affirmed this last year in the Caremark case in 2007, that we cited multiple cases in our brief deciding this issue on summary judgment. I think we cited 12 cases, seven of which were decided on summary judgment. It's pretty routinely decided on summary judgment. And I think if you take a look at what counsel said is very instructive. If you take a look at what they say the contract is and the specificity, particularly what counsel just said with the Lautenbach email, and compare it to the specificity that's actually in the statements of work, it's not even close. The statements of work have the duration, the actual parties who are involved, the prices, the completion criteria, the duration, everything you would expect to see in a contract that involves a $42 million implementation at the Chicago Transit Authority. I think it's very clear that this case should have been decided as a matter of law and summary judgment, and it was.
That Schedule D, there are actually two versions of that that were filed.
There were three different versions of it over time, and it might help if I explained
it. Anyway, it did say contract amount, $3.6 million.
It did say that, yes. What those are projections. The way this works, Your Honor, is IBM has a contract with the Chicago Transit Authority. Okay. BSE claimed in the court below that they were a third-party beneficiary of the contract. Judge Bucklow ruled against them. They've now dropped that claim. They're pretty clearly not a third-party beneficiary. The contract says there are not third-party beneficiaries. This 30% DBE requirement comes from the CTA because it's a Department of Transportation regulation, and the Schedule C's and D's that you see attached to the IBM CTA contract, which were amended over time, is IBM's projection to show the CTA that we can get to this 30% amount. The C sets forth who the contractor is. The D, aptly named a utilization plan, not a contract, it's a plan. Both forms say they are not written contracts and that written contracts will be entered into later. That's IBM's commitment to the CTA. And what actually happened on this project, Your Honors, is that IBM fulfilled its obligation under the CTA contract. There's no dispute about that. We gave 42% of the contract amount to the various DBEs. There were six total DBEs, four of whom exceeded their projections, two of whom did not get to their projection, one of which is BSE. BSE is the only one who's complained about this. No one else has said anything. The CTA has never claimed there was any breach of contract. And if you actually look in the record, it's in the local rule 56.1 statement, attached as Exhibit 7. There's a description of how this whole DBE program works, and that if BSE had some sort of complaint with what IBM was doing and giving it work, there's an administrative apparatus set up with a compliance officer at the CTA who's supposed to look into any sorts of complaints. That there's nothing in the record about that happening here, and it certainly doesn't support a breach of contract claim. So the district court, we think, properly granted summary judgment because the essential terms aren't here. Because the district court was dealing with a five-count complaint, she didn't get to all of our alternative reasons for why summary judgment should be granted. And I think there are a couple that are pretty clear here that the district court could be affirmed just on the basis that she decided, but there are multiple other grounds that I think doom BSE's claim here as a matter of law. And I would encourage the court to, in particular, look at BSE's local rule 56.1 response, where they have admitted and conceded, I believe, all the facts required and contract terms required to show they're not entitled to $3.6 million. The way the contracting structure works with the subcontractors, the DBEs like BSE, is there's a master agreement that's entered into that supplies the standard commercial terms that would be used across a variety of projects. So if IBM had used BSE for other projects in addition to the CTA project, this master agreement is in place, and the parties don't have to renegotiate the standard commercial terms that one would expect to see in a deal like this. I mean, it's got warranties, limitations on remedies, what happens with intellectual property rights, all of those sorts of things. And what the contract says specifically, and what BSE has admitted here in its 56.1 statement, is that they're not supposed to supply any services to IBM until a purchase order, also known as a work authorization, is entered following the entry of a statement of work. And that's the only money they're entitled to. This is black letter in the contract. They've admitted it. There's no dispute that we paid them everything they were owed pursuant to the statements of work and the concomitant work authorizations and purchase orders. We only owed them $2.2 million under the actual contracts. If you take a look at that, it's called the Customer Solutions Agreement. You'll also see it referred to in the brief as the Master Agreement or the Base Agreement. There's no controversy here that agreement governs this project. BSE has admitted it. It has an integration clause in it that bars any prior oral contracts. Now, I have to tell you, from reading BSE's brief, this whole case has been a little bit of a moving target from our perspective as to what BSE claims the contract actually is. I'm not really sure from reading their brief what it is at this point. They seem to think it's some component of the CTA contract, which they're not even a third-party beneficiary of. They seem to think it's an oral contract, although there's no specifics supplied. They seem to think it's the C's and D's, although I think I just heard counsel say they admit now that's not a contract. That would be probably the first we had heard of that. But if you look at the integration clause, Your Honor, it bars any prior oral agreements, and it defines oral agreement as including the agreement as including each of the statements of work that were issued over time from 2002 to 2004. By definition, the agreement would have subsumed any oral agreement that BSE was contending here. I think they're out of court just on the terms of the base agreement here. Judge Bucklow didn't get to that. It's an alternative ground. Your Honor raised the statute of frauds. I think they have a statute of frauds problem here as well, because the contract was not completed in 2 years. I mean, in 1 year, I'm sorry. It's undisputed that BSE worked on this engagement for close to 2 years. It was not performed in 1 year. I see my
Before you go, I just wanted to make sure I get something straight here. You start with a statement of work. Then you go to what you call a work authorization.
Right. It's actually where you start. There's the base agreement that's got the commercial terms. Okay. Then there's a statement of work.
That segments it.
That segments it out. And then after the statement of work is issued, there's something called a purchase order issued, which actually authorizes BSE to start working on the project. That, just to confuse matters further, that purchase order is also referred to as a work authorization. Purchase order and a work authorization are the same thing.
Okay. So, but anyway, that's the contract.
Yes. It's the base agreement, the statement of work, and the purchase order.
Now, there was some talk about certain things they didn't have personnel. At what stage is that determined? When your statement of work, we're discussing that, and they say, well, you don't have the people that can do this, right. So you go to someone else? How does that work?
Here's the way this works, Your Honor, is that when it's determined a resource is needed to do a part of the project, it's advertised to all of the DBEs, not just BSE.
So they have six DBEs who, frankly, I guess can maybe do any one of these.
Yeah, it's probably more specific to different parts of the project. There is some overlap. But if there's it's advertised for a candidate. If they propose, what happened here is in a lot of instances, BSE didn't have any candidate at all that they proposed. In other instances, they proposed candidates that were either rejected by IBM or the CTA, because the CTA had ultimate veto power over this as well, which, I mean, I think if you think about it as a matter of common sense, I think their claim is we owe them $3.6 million no matter what they do and no matter what happens as part of the project, even though the CTA has veto power over accepting resources. I mean, it doesn't make any sense as a matter of common sense, and it certainly isn't supported by the evidence. And I think if you look at it this way, Your Honor, what if the project went from $40 million to $10 million? What if the CTA decided that they wanted to have a lesser ERP system? I think according to BSE's theory, we still owe them $3.6 million.
All right. Well, you've answered my question.
Okay. I just have one other thing. Where in the record will I find this transition from the work authorization to purchase order? You say they're also known as.
There, if you read the customer solutions agreement, which is the base agreement.
Doesn't it refer to work authorizations?
And it says they're called purchase orders. And if you look in the record with the 56.1, there should be a purchase order that corresponds to each statement of work.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
We kept your opponent up here so long. I'll give you 3 minutes in rebuttal. But you don't have to use all of it if you don't want it.
First of all, we're not suing on this customer service agreement, this CSA. This was some agreement it entered into in 2000 before the CTA contract even, and it, whatever's in this customer service agreement that they keep trotting out could not possibly bar the subsequent agreement that we're suing on here, which was in August of 2003, which was a promise, and in the words of IBM's own people, a commitment to provide $3.6 million in SOWs to BSE.
Do you guys compete with other DBEs?
No, we were not competing with other DBEs.
Well, I mean, if more than one of them can do the same statement of work, who determines which one does it?
Well, IBM makes the determination as long as they comply with what we say is the agreement here to provide $3.6 million total in SOWs to BSE. What they did with the other disadvantaged entities is their own concern, I suppose.
But he says that four did more and two did less than whatever they were.
That may or may not have been, but we didn't get the we're 1.4 million short in work that was promised by the admissions, I suggest, of IBM's own executives. Those are not my words. Those are not BSE's words that I cited. They are IBM's own executives that said it was a commitment. It was a commitment. The district court did not even mention those three individual testimony of the IBM executives in her opinion. She says it's a question of law, and she said BSE's people, their characterizations that they had an agreement doesn't make it an agreement. She may be right, but their lay characterizations certainly are evidence of an intent to be bound, and here we have evidence of an intent to be bound by IBM's own executives.
And you say it arose in August of 2003?
Yes.
Hadn't most of the $2.2 million worth of work been performed as of August of 2003?
I think close to that amount, if I'm correct. They had another $1.4 million to go.
So it's 3.6 minus 2.2.
Right. That's the damages would be 1.4 of our theory. And again, we're relying on the words of IBM's own executives, which they're now scrambling to get out from under. I guess maybe their executives didn't mean it when they made these representations to us. That's really the position they're in. And I wouldn't be here if the district court had weighed that evidence, had put it in her opinion, and for some lawful reason said, I'm not going to abide by it. But the cases say that in Illinois, and we've cited them, pages 6 and 9 of our opening brief, it is a jury question when the facts are embroiled as they are here. And the question is, was there an intent to be bound to this $3.6 million? And we should be entitled to present our admissions by their own executives that said it was a commitment. In that sense, the case is really simple. They're trying to make it complicated, and I understand that. So the court erred by saying it was a pure question of law, which Illinois says it is not under these circumstances. The court erred in ignoring the powerful, and I regard admissions of an intent to be bound by IBM's own executives. And I think a properly instructed, reasonable jury could find from this evidence, and I've tried enough jury cases to think so, a jury could rule for BSE on this evidence, and I think that was taken away. This is a sympathetic client. I want to do the best I can for them. This case is all they have left, and I think what they're entitled to is a trial at which they can present this evidence to a jury, properly instructed jury under Illinois law. That's all we're asking for.
All right.
So I'd ask you to reverse the summary judgment and give us a chance to prove our case.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. And this case will be taken under advisement as well.